This episode of Robin's Podcast is sponsored by Bet Online. Currently, no NBA, NHL, or MLB. You might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on from their online casinos, the poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live, daily, Madden, NFL 20 simulations, which you can wager on. If you're into entertainment betting, you could still bet on Survivor, American Idol, stock prices, even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. It's all open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner Podcast One, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's talk about tweets and take a quiz so we can find out who the smartest one is. What happened this week in Survivor?
Yeah, what a week. Great week in Survivor. So much to talk about here. Let's bring in the man who brings us together here on this show every week. The host of the This Week in Survivor History Quiz, the great Jordan Kalish. Jordan, how are you?
I am doing great. The llama has spoken many times during this episode, and as a big Tony Vlachos fan, I had a fun week watching Survivor.
Okay. Sure that you are going to be shot out of a cannon today.
I'm always shot out of a cannon.
No, not always.
I think I'm usually, maybe it's not always a cannon, but I think I've always shot out of something.
Shot out of something. But yeah, I'm sure you're going to be worked up as a longtime Vlachos stan.
Yes, lamination, baby.
Okay, all right. And we are blessed to have here with us here today one of the great podcast voices around. Of course, you could hear him over on Post Show Recaps, currently talking about Better Call Saul, which is just wrapping up a spectacular fifth season, here to take a victory lap for an excellent season of podcasting, the great Antonio Mazzaro.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you, Jordan, for having me. I'm very excited. What a week. What an honor. Just very lucky to be here for this particular episode. The theme song of This Week in Survivor History, so appropriate, that kind of low-key, sneaking around beat. And I would like to move to Vlachos stan, actually. I'm hearing that there are no issues there. They're not under quarantine.
Good.
Everything in Vlachos stan is fine.
Good. Okay. Antonio, how are you doing?
Doing well, Rob. Doing as well as can be expected. Definitely enjoyed podcasting with Josh Wiggler over there at Post Show Recaps this year about Better Call Saul. And really enjoying podcasting about Top Chef over at Reality TV Wrap-Ups.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We record those on the same day that we're recording this. So we are really having a good time with Haley Strong, Emily Fox, Josh Wiggler, Kirk Clark, Mike Bloom, and myself every week doing that as fans of the show. And it's a real nice breakup for our weeks when we get to get together and talk about that.
Yes, and I am looking forward to join you and Josh to talk about feedback from season 5 of
Yes.
Better Call Saul coming up in the beginning of this week that we are about to kick off. So I'm very much looking forward to getting into that with you guys. All right, Antonio, it's been a crazy week. I was hyperbolic in the know-it-alls. I said, not only the best episode of the season, best Survivor episode in years. Were you as high on Survivor this week?
I was. And I got to say, rewatching the episode, I remained so. It just, everything before the immunity challenge is fun and it's lively and there's a lot of good stuff going on there. But then everything after the immunity challenge is just electric because you know what's coming. You know where the seeds are sown and planted. And just watching that all play out is just so fun. And it is obviously very Tony heavy, but we have been going somewhat Tony-like this season. Like Tony himself says, he's been playing it a little quieter. So we've had our little interludes of Tony racing himself down the beach or Tony almost falling to his death off of a ladder. But we haven't seen the full-on hijinks like we see this season or this episode. And really seeing the high-level strategy that we've seen, it's just a combination of all those things that made this episode so, so good. And I, Rob, really enjoyed your podcast this week, but I especially enjoyed And I would love to, I don't know if you've done it yet. You said you were going to go on the Shane Show with Shane Powers. I loved your podcast with Shane Powers before. I have loved nothing more, I think, in RHAP than listening to the awkward, sometimes, relationship between you and Shane evolve over the years.
Yes.
Because there's that tension there. Everyone in the world is afraid of Shane. So to see the two of you evolve your relationship, it's been a true pleasure. And I thought this was another great podcast from Shane.
Thank you. Yeah, we got a lot of positive feedback about Shane and just the way that he looks at things, which is very different than maybe the conventional wisdom. And even for a podcast that got dropped on a Wednesday morning before the episode, the people that went back and listened to that one have really enjoyed it. And so I have not yet gone back onto Shane's podcast yet, but we're still trying to figure that out. We were texting Jordan about Shane is serious about doing some sort of Survivor Mafia game.
That is great news. I think Shane would be an extremely interesting person to play Mafia with. I think he would be out very quickly in most of these games. I think he'd make himself a big target right off the bat. But I mean,
he said
the same
he wants
thing
to lead it. He wants to lead the game.
Oh, he wants to lead it. So he wants to take my spot as the mafia host. That's my role.
Okay, I'll let him know. I'll let him know. That's okay. Your,
now
your,
Shane,
your job.
Shane could do it. Shane could do it. I'll play. I'll play and Shane can run it.
Okay.
He does not want to take your spot as Boston Rob's drinking buddy. I can tell you that much.
No.
That's fair.
No, he does not. All right. Antonio, let me get your perspective on everything that has gone into this vote for this week. What were some of your thoughts that we haven't yet discussed on the podcast around this vote?
I've just been very interested to see the way winners play against winners, and so many of these winners. And we heard Sophie, I think, articulated in a way that was depressing at the end of this episode, saying that she thought of herself as a lower tier winner. Anybody who's winning Survivor played some kind of game, and I have articulated this on RHAP in the past. Even the Bob Crowleys of the world and the people that during your Evolution of Strategy rewatch ranked lower on your winner rankings, they played a game that got them to the end. They got the votes from the jury. They did some things along the way, even if we didn't see them, that I think marked in their favor. Sophie certainly did some of those things. But it's fascinating to see, for me, the way some of these people who we see as great winners, people like Kim Spradlin, have to play in a different way than they played their first season. And I think what we saw was so much of that this episode, so much of what happens with Tony and the vote at the end of the episode is in response to and is a fallout from everything that happened in the previous tribal council. When Jeremy, who was the target, gets up and leaves, when Tyson goes home, when there is a scramble, and when there's a feeling that there's five against four, when an idol gets played in a way that didn't protect, didn't get the result that it wanted, we're seeing fallout from that. Kim and Denise in this episode, as a result, they have to act in protection of themselves, as anyone would. They don't really have too many other moves other than to save their own butts. But it is their move that causes Tony to say, hey, the door's open for me. I can go in and do this. So I just think it's fascinating on such a high level season of Survivor to see those moves happen in real time the way that they do, and to see them be executed not in whispers at Tribal Council, but on the beach and through players taking active control of their games and seeing the response to that. It's just really, really cool to watch, for sure.
So I think you bring up something that's really interesting that we definitely haven't explored yet, because I've said that I feel like that once Kim and Denise come on board, Tony is like, you know what, this is too many people at this party. Maybe the women are getting together. He didn't like that. And he said, okay, well, you know, I'd rather keep Jeremy in the game and knock out one of these people that's working with Sarah. So do you feel like that was that a mistake that opened the door for Kim and Denise to put their votes with that bigger group to turn on Jeremy at this point at the final nine?
Gosh, it's so hard to say that, right? Because if you think about what their options are, the votes being split and Kim having to put her vote on Michelle, at least that was what we saw in the 3 seconds that we saw it. Tony and Nick at that point were still both Jeremy votes. So even if Kim and Denise go to Jeremy and Michelle and they run the same plan that Tony runs and they say, hey, they're going to split votes. We're not going to do that. The four of us, let's go. Let's vote Ben out because that's who Jeremy wanted out anyway. The problem, of course, is that those Jeremy votes still stay Jeremy votes. And as a result, it's 4-4 and there isn't something there. So Kim and Denise probably have to do more than just get Jeremy and Michelle on board, which is, of course, what Tony had to do. Tony had to go and get Nick on board as well. But I don't know that if by doing that, they blow things up. At that point, does it just go back to the five? It's very difficult to say that they could have done something differently. I think it just goes to show you that in a game like this where you're not playing with replacement level players, you're playing with winners, so that when you act in a way that in a normal game is probably the right thing to do, save your ass, split the votes, we're good to go, there's going to be a reaction, especially at this point in the game, from a very good player who's going to see that as an opportunity. I'm not sure that you can do anything different when you're in the minority already, but maybe, I mean, we'll see how it plays out going forward, because it's a bold move by Tony. How do you predict that there's going to be a bold move? I don't know that you can. But I mean, it's just exploring that out. I think all they could have really done, obviously, is try to get themselves to the point where, because they know a vote split's happening, they can pull one other person in. But at that point, I mean, what are the relationships? Does Kim pull Nick in? Does Denise pull Nick in? Is that something that's even possible? Yeah. That's really hard to say. It's really hard to say.
And where I think that this is interesting is that we saw this contrast in style earlier this season. And I think this came up back with when it was Rob and Parvati and Ethan. And there was a point where Adam says to Boston Rob, we're voting for Parv, but I'm keeping you. You'll be safe. I'll protect you. And we saw that Boston Rob does not do that. He does not, that these are my people. I don't turn my back on that. We saw, Russell in Survivor Samoa also. That's like, hey, our group is tight. Our group isn't going to turn on each other. And there was that group of Kim and Denise and Jeremy. And they came into this merge. Okay, we're going to work together. And they made the decision, okay, we're going to flip on Jeremy. We're going to leave Jeremy out to dry to protect ourselves and maybe get something going in this group. And we've certainly seen it work out for a player to be the, like, sort of like the Danny Boatwright or the Chris Daugherty, to be like, sort of like, okay, I'm the last person left from my group and I will sort of like, they'll forget about me. But I just think it was interesting that we saw, like, basically those two contrasting styles of cutting bait or no, I'm never turning on my people. You guys are going to crack before we are.
I definitely agree. And neither of them, I mean, it may be that neither of them works at the end of the day. It may be that both of those styles were in such a position that it's just not going to happen. But I think what really occurred to me as we were rewatching the episode, especially, is that nothing happens in a vacuum. Like, it is because they made the decision about Jeremy, and it's because they put themselves in that position before, that they're now in the position where they're scrambling. And Kim, I think, rightly reads, at least prior to Tony winning immunity, that Tony's playing them as, you know, as a double agent. But I think wrongly does not consider the fact that once he wins that necklace, things can change. And it's interesting that Kim and Denise aren't considering that because of what they did. I mean, things changed for them. I don't see why things couldn't change for Tony. So it is fascinating to see all this play out. I mean, it's a great move by Tony, obviously. It's
right.
All the things you talked about with Steven, leaving it till the 11th hour, waiting on the beach, going to Jeremy, maybe not going to Michelle, all these things that he did in order for it to actually work. With Sophie having an idol in her pocket. Because if Tony goes around and is seen around camp stirring things up early, Sophie can play that idol. All these things make the move work. It's just really great to see, for sure.
Yeah, and Jordan, let me ask you, did Jeremy leaving the tribal council, do you feel like that for Kim and Denise, do they sort of feel like a little bit like, hey, we love Jeremy, but, you know, he didn't have our back when the chips are down. So, all right, sorry, Jeremy, we got to turn on you at this point.
I mean, maybe that made it a little bit easier to turn on him, but I think if they looked at this from Jeremy's perspective, they would see that it was definitely the right move, because Jeremy is out at the previous tribal council, and we saw Ben's confessional talking about that. It was very clear when Jeremy left and the other five people had to regroup and come up with a new strategy that Jeremy was going to be the one who was out. So I think Kim and Denise, based on the information that they had, they see themselves as being part of the minority and Jeremy's the next one to go. I think they made the right survivor decision to go to the other side. Of course, based on what you and Antonio were just saying, now they're in a position where, they could have maybe been in a majority, being willing to put to be part of the majority vote split, I think did go into Tony's decision to turn on Sophie there. Mm-hmm. So now they're in a spot where, you know, Jeremy and Michelle are probably going to be mad at them. It's going to be potentially hard for them to work with like Tony and Nick, and their only options might be Sarah and Ben, but that's only four. So I think it was the right move from, you know, from the perspective of, you know, what they knew at the time, but it might end up having a bad outcome for them in the future. So, and I really just think it shows the level of play this season. So yeah. I don't think Jeremy's decision to leave was like, okay, you know, screw this guy. He kind of abandoned us at tribal council. I don't think it was them saying like, oh, you know, we can't work with this guy anymore. I think they looked at the position that they were at in the game and thought it was the right move. When in reality, it turns out that, you know, 9 times out of 10, it probably is the right move. But I think in this situation, it's going to end up being, you know, maybe either Kim or Denise going home next potentially. Yeah.
And Tony, not to spend too much time on last week's tribal council, but it seems like that we never had the conversation between Jeremy, Tyson, and Kim and being able to, okay, who has what advantages in the same way that we saw in David versus Goliath when all the Davids were on the beach together. They're like, oh, okay, I've got steal a vote. I've got the idol nullifier. I've got the idol. Okay, this is how we play this, where Kim says, I'm going to play the idol and I'm not going to play it on myself here at this tribal council. But it seems like that information never gets to Jeremy, and I'm not sure if Kim ever had the information that Jeremy is thinking about leaving this tribal council.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, we don't know if that happened.
And he tells Tyson, I'm not sure if Kim finds that out.
Right. It's a function, I think, of, again, it's maybe, I think I like the way you said it, Jordan, 9 times out of 10, but we're on a 1 time out of 40 season. We've never had an all winter season, and the game does change. The game shifts, and it doesn't shift in ways that it's necessarily like more advantages or more idols, although that is happening. It shifts in terms of how players react and respond to things, who they choose to share information with, sometimes keeping things maybe closer to the vest than they would in a normal season, where they can, you know, you're dealing with replacement level survivor players. You're dealing with all winners here. And we've seen this throughout. Obviously, the move with Sandra and Denise, the issue with Sandra is that she's treating Denise like a replacement level player, not like Denise that we know crushed it. So it is, I think we see, we could probably chart that across the majority of the season. When these big things happen, they happen in part because you're dealing with people who won the game. And so the way they think about the game is just different. And because it hits different, we're seeing a lot of these big things happen. And it's great. I mean, I think other than the fact that there are a lot of advantages and there's a lot of exile, or there's a lot of Edge of Extinction, and maybe it's not classic Survivor content in that way, it's fascinating to see what we do see in terms of the strategy and analyze the big moves that happen because we're dealing with all winners. It's really cool to watch.
Okay, so one of the things that was very memorable in this episode, Antonio, was Tony getting the extortion advantage played on him. And I would love to talk this through a little bit with you because, of course, Tony ends up receiving the extortion advantage in the episode.
Extortion. First word I read is extortion. This is great.
Yeah, Tony... Antonio seems to be very infatuated with the idea of extortion. I see that was an odd reaction, I feel like, that if you get a piece of paper that says extortion, it's like, yes, extortion. I love it so much.
He goes out of his way to say, I could never do it. You know, I can't do it in my life. I would love to, but I can't do it. It's like yes. He very clearly is suppressing these feelings for extortion.
Yeah, it is odd that he does seem to be very excited about that notion. That here is Tony talking about, yeah, how he would love to be involved in extortion somehow.
The first word I saw that popped out to me was extortion. I'm like, yes! I'm going to extort somebody. Because in real life, I can't do that. But I know it sounds like fun when I watch in the movies, the mobsters extort people for money, or they're going to break your legs, or you break your kneecaps if you don't give me this and that.
Okay, Antonio, you have podcast many prestige drama in your time, I'm sure, across Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and other shows. You have seen various characters extorted or possibly extorting. Have you ever watched one of those shows and said, you know, that looks like so fun?
I've watched enough of them to know that it never ends well. Like, the back end of that situation is not great. It usually does not come back in a way that's positive for you. I've seen the endings of those shows. I've seen the endings of those seasons. So, yeah, I guess sometimes it looks like fun. You watch Goodfellas, for example, and the first act of Goodfellas, it just looks so fun. Like, all these things that are happening, And then you remember how the movie ends for everybody. And we got, whether it's egg noodles and ketchup or people not making it through the movie, it doesn't end up fun. So Tony maybe needs to watch more TV or maybe stick through till the end of the seasons or the movies, because it doesn't end up fun. It is so funny, though, because obviously he's a police officer, not a construction worker, underreported. And he has he not seen Serpico? Cops should not want to be involved in the dirty game here, for sure.
Yep. Jordan, have you ever thought extortion looks like a fun time?
I've never really considered extortion before. I don't think I'd be very good at it. What I do think was amazing about this is that this is an episode of Survivor where Tony finds an idol. And his best confessional has nothing to do with that idol, which I think is, if you had that before the season, if you had your money on that, you're a rich man now.
So you have many fire tokens, enough to be extorted by Parvati and Natalie Anderson.
Here's the thing. I think the extorters, it's going to work out pretty well for them, because I'm assuming that Natalie and Parvati are going to split those six fire tokens. And, you know, if one of them gets back into the game, maybe we'll look back on this and see, oh, they got all these advantages in the next Edge of Extinction challenge.
Yeah, Antonio, was this bad for anybody who has like dirt on Tony? It's like, Tony will move heaven and earth to get that extortion money.
It might have been bad for that, but Parvati and Natalie were able to read that instantly. So that was before he actually did it. That was just knowing what they know about this guy. They knew to pick him out because he would be willing to do that. So yes, it's bad, but I think that was already out there. That was on the streets already for sure.
Okay.
And by the way, though, I mean, I know you get, there's a confessional in this episode of it where Sarah is talking about Tony having no social game, but I think he really shows an incredible social game here, where he's able to get the three fire tokens he needs from three separate people who are in different alliances. Like the fact that he's an integral part of the two main alliances that you know, in the last episode were in this game, it really just shows that how many connections he has. And yes, it's partly strategic that he's working with all these people, but I think he really showed his social game as well.
Yeah, I think he has a much different social game than Sarah. But, you know, that when he comes to you and he's like, oh, my God, I need the money. Like, all right, I'll help you out, Tony. You seem very upset about this.
He would be. He says he's never really gone undercover in his job. He's not a Derek Levasseur in that way. But I think it would be really funny to see Tony go undercover. I'm not sure he would be very good at
it. Where would you send him, Antonio?
If he were undercover?
Would this be like a 21 Jump Street type situation where we send him into a high school? Yes. Oh my God, kids! I can't believe that I got to do all this work at home. I thought we were gonna go and have my senior year of high school, but now I got to do all this homework.
I want to send Keith Nail undercover in that same movie, so that he, instead of saying TikTok, he can say Tuk Tuk, the Toto. Yeah, that would be good. No, that is Tony. You could put Tony in just about any scenario, and I think it would be entertaining. I think they know that, and I think he knows that. But I think the awesome bit about this whole season, and certainly his wife seems to have played a role in this,
baby cakes,
is he learned he had to walk before he ran this time around. Like he had to play it cool before he could really let this loose. And we're certainly going to see the fallout of this next week. And we're going to see if he's able to dial it back in and if he's able to do what you have called, Rob, the unicorn game, where he's the only one who can consistently swing back and forth. He is without a net, live ammunition, Survivor Winners at War here. So if he does it, oh my gosh, what an achievement that would be.
Yeah, I hope there's no fallout, because in the preview we see that he's in a tree, so a fallout could be very dangerous here. And you said he had to, and it looks like he will fly. He will be able to fly up the tree in the next episode and be in a nest.
So
he flew.
Tony, also, he does seem to know a little bit about extortion in terms of what kind of a violation this is.
I'll tell you what, man. If this in real life, you're doing some prison time.
This is extortion code 2C something. I know it's a criminal code that extortion is illegal in the States. I don't know why it's not illegal here in Fiji.
Okay. Antonio, as a lawyer, can I ask you, do you happen to know of what violation of the penal code extortion is?
I do not. Okay. It's 2C a better result, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Tony knows all about it. Also, I don't know if he saw Serpico, but he definitely did see Scarface.
Say hello to my little friend.
That's what it
I just looked up. Tony wasn't that far off. Looks like theft by extortion in New Jersey is 2C20-5.
Yeah.
We got a 2C25 over here.
Oh, theft by extortion. What's happening? Somebody trying to take the fire tokens?
Yep. Tony did try to get the fire tokens. I thought, Jordan, it was interesting. He went to Michelle, and Michelle was able to tell him that she didn't have any fire tokens left to give him. Does this change the calculus on Michelle paying the four fire tokens for the 50-50 idol?
No, because I think she did a good job of talking herself out of it. She was able to tell him why I don't have any.
She got something out of it other than just giving it to Tony to waste.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it was a good explanation by her. She didn't seem like she was lying when she was telling Tony what she used the four fire tokens on. She didn't end up having to tell him about the 50-50 advantage. And I think Tony completely bought it. So I would say that Michelle was able to talk herself out of a tough situation. And this is, and I completely agreed with her decision to spend four fire tokens, even though it's not the best advantage ever. Mm-hmm. You don't know when you're getting something else. So, and especially now when you have a guy like Tony who's coming to people for fire tokens, now you have an excuse not to give him one.
Yeah. Okay. Antonio, Michelle had to scramble on her feet to come up with the story about that she actually got an advantage that she'll get. She has it on layaway over on the Edge of Extinction. Here's Michelle telling us about how she had to think fast on her feet.
I don't want people knowing about my advantage. So I have to piece together, scramble together some kind of cock and bull story about me using my fire tokens for an advantage on Edge of Extinction.
Tell me, what kind of story did she have to put together?
I believe that was a cock and bull story, Rob.
Cock and bull.
Cock and bull story.
It's like the old Adam Sandler cock and ball sketch.
Thank you. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you. It's just like that. Is that a real phrase, Antonio? Or are we going for like a cockamamie?
Or like the bull is like the BS part
bull.
Of the bull? Yeah, I mean, I know cock and bull is like a popular name for like an English pub. I know in the States, several cock and bulls. But I think she was going for cockamamie and bull BS. And maybe I just don't know it.
I think I've heard cock and bull before.
Cock and bull?
I'm pretty sure it's a thing. It's like a synonym for malarkey.
Cock and bull story.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'll buy it.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's probably
right. We've heard Michelle use outdated phrases on Survivor.
Yeah.
Malarkey and cock and bull. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
cock and bull.
I don't know. But I'm afraid to type cock and bull into my search browser.
Just get an incognito browser on.
Yeah, just be careful with that. Yeah, leave safe search on.
Incognito. That sounds so fun. Okay. All right, another part of the episode, we got to hear a little bit of some of the things that Nick has heard about himself in his time since playing Survivor. This was a story that Nick was opening up to some of the other survivors about some things that he had read.
On the internet, when my season aired, Evil Adonathan Vampire, as they called me.
You do kind of have vampire features.
You have vampire
features. And then you're kind of pale and you have that hair.
Yeah, you kind of like look like...
You could be
Twilight.
Yeah, you make a good vampire.
The vampires were good looking.
Did you shape your teeth like that?
Okay. Evil Donathan Vampire. First off, there's some like a 13-year-old kid on the internet who was like going nuts that they got a shout out on Survivor this week.
Yeah, it's definitely a Reddit thread from September 2018 called Evil Vampire Donathan. So there you go.
Evil Vampire Donathan. That's a very specific reference. But Antonio, that, you know, people do love the horror movies. I was trying to think this week that if there was a horror reboot of or a the horror movie, if we went to work on the screenplay of Evil Vampire Donathan, what would the plot of an Evil Vampire Donathan story be, played by Nick Wilson?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, it's set in Kentucky, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's the beginning. Should it involve Ghost Island in some way?
Okay. Because I feel like that there are not a lot of vampire stories that are set here in the, you know, the heartland, Antonio.
There aren't. I mean, obviously, you could give the Southern Gothic and get into True Blood and The Walking Dead.
Yeah, that's like, but that's, is that like New Orleans True Blood?
That is. It is. So, and The Walking Dead famously starts in Kentucky and is made, created by a Kentuckian. So there was some hook, I think, a little bit on that front is let's do a zombie story that has a little bit less of the inner city connection, maybe, and more of the road kind of connection, flyover country. But we could do Kentucky vampires with Nick, evil vampire Donathan. I like that. The problem is, I don't want bad things to befall Donathan Hurley. That would be well, something I would be against.
So this is Donathan that we start out with. It's the story of like the, you know, unassuming young man, Donathan. But unfortunately, one night that
it's a ghost
that comes from Ghost Island and then ultimately is going to bite him. He's going to get bit and become this evil vampire Donathan. I think the protagonist in this story might have to be
Patty.
What do you think of this, Santonio? Aunt Patty is the protagonist who is trying to put down evil vampire Donathan.
Yeah. Oh gosh. It makes me feel so sad. You could have this. I mean, wasn't Donathan's occupation, wasn't he just called a caretaker? Maybe you make him a caretaker of some kind of cemetery or graveyard, and that's a part of it. I like Aunt Patty coming in, but I just wish that he wasn't evil vampire Donathan. I wish he was just vampire Donathan. But, you know, Nick Wilson's face is Nick Wilson's face. What are you going to do?
So, listen to this. This is a scene from the movie where right before, the evil or regular Donathan is noticing that maybe was visited by the Ghost Island vampire.
I don't know exactly how tonight's going to play out, but I'm scared that if I go one way that it could bite me in the butt.
Yeah.
Where all vampires are known to bite. Go right for the butt. Everyone knows that. It's a common fact.
Right for the butt. Then, Jordan, is it possible, could Sia emerge in this story to help out Donathan, evil vampire Donathan, in this time of need?
You know, I think Sia does have a cameo in this movie, and I mean, she's known for seeing the good in people, for seeing the good in people, and maybe she gives him some sort of like cash prize at some point, and he's like, you know what, if famous singer Sia can see the good in me, maybe I should turn my life around and not be an evil vampire anymore.
Yeah, like people are wondering, is there something wrong with Donathan? He seems to be an evil vampire Donathan.
I had Bradley barking orders at me, and even though we won, oh my God, the fire that was in my body was raging.
Oh no. Oh, no. He's gone feral.
Oh no.
If this is the story of Ghost Island, though, I mean, maybe the plot twist is that like he's being mind controlled by two evil monsters named Dominic and Wendell. And he's just doing their bidding the whole time.
Oh, no, no.
I'm not voting for you if you and him sit in there. I'm voting for Dom.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay, all right.
Perhaps in the spirit of these classic film tales, we have the Bride of Frankenstein. Perhaps what could save evil Donathan vampire or evil vampire Donathan is some kind of marriage. Maybe Adam Klein could get involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you think that he would have a
marriage?
I don't know. That part, we have to work in the writer's room with that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought Adam Klein might be able to come in. That would be good.
Okay. And then how is the evil Donathan vampire eventually slain?
Oh, gosh, that's brutal. Jordan, do you have any ideas on this? I can't let that thought into my brain.
You know what? I think he's just, you know, Sia comes in and he's so intrigued by Sia. He doesn't need to be slain. He becomes a good guy vampire.
Okay.
He survives. That's the twist.
He survives.
Do you think in like the climactic part of the movie, a song just randomly plays to let us know that we should be ready for the ending?
Yes. The evil ass biting vampires are coming for you.
You know, they got loaded pockets back there. They could easily pull it out for killing tonight and write my name down. So I'm always on my toes as well.
Okay. Yep. All right.
Got to watch out for those ABVs.
All right. Evil Donathan Vampire coming to, not a cinema, but direct to Apple TV, right?
No, Quibi, I think is going to be it stands for Quick Bites. Come on, Rob.
Yeah, Quick Bites with the evil Donathan. Okay. Maybe could that be the idea for a season? Donathan versus evil Donathan.
I like it. I'm all for all Kentucky season. So let's get Elaine on there. Bust a can of biscuits. Let's do what we got to do.
Okay. Sounds good. Also this week, so we got a couple of other fun moments that Tony was, you know, he really was very upset about the amount of fire tokens that this advantage was going to cost him. This is what Tony had to say.
Whoa, the price of milk just went up.
Okay. Tony is very sensitive to inflation, Antonio.
It's milk. What could it cost? $10? Like, come on. Yeah. He's very sensitive to island inflation. Do you think, is six the right number? Like, did they pick the highest number they could possibly pick?
I think they nailed it.
Going lower? Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. I mean, it was divisible. They got 3 and 3 probably. So, very, very smart way to go, to extort Tony. And I just loved it so much the way they did it on the episode, Jordan, where they like, cut to like, there's only, one person who we could possibly get to do this. And then, you know, we get to see a shot of Tony, as we go to commercial break. They really did a great job with that.
Yeah. Only one man will give me the raspberry, Tony.
Yeah. All right. Are we ready to get into social media? Anything else you want to make sure we touch on from this week, Antonio?
My hottest take, and I'll be interested to see where we are after next week. But I actually think because it's an all winter season and because her target was so big, I think Kim is playing a better game in this season of Survivor than she did in her winning season, which was, in my opinion, against below replacement level players. Sorry to anyone who's listening from that cast. But I think what we're seeing here is a much more difficult game that Kim is negotiating here than anything she had to worry about. And she would say it herself. Like, I'm sure that this was harder for her than anything that happened on her season, watching this season play out. So I'm not the biggest fan or the biggest backer of the story that she is the best player or the best winner, because I just don't think that that cast was anything to write home about compared to a lot of these other winners. But seeing her with these winners, it has been fascinating to watch. Not just Kim, but I think Kim is center stage right now with everything that's happened in the last few weeks with the idol and with everything that happened with moving away with Denise this week. And it seems like what could come next week. I think we're seeing the Kim Spradlin part of this season here. So I think that she is negotiating a much more difficult map here, and we saw a lot of other players already get voted out this season. So the fact that she's still hanging around, it's been really interesting to watch for me, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a really hard thing to untangle, because I think that when we look at a season and somebody's dominance in the season, I do think that the part that is hard to measure is just the level of competition. Where did they dominate because they were up against a lower level competition? And I wonder if maybe it's that you could have a hard fought victory and it'd be just as impressive as a more dominant victory, depending on who you're playing against.
I also think it's possible. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think clearly the One World cast is a subpar cast when it comes to strategy. But I also think it's possible that Kim was so good and so dominant that she made them look even worse than they actually were. But I do agree with your point here that even though we talked about it, where Kim made a move in this episode that I think is not going to help her in this game, we saw her figure out, we saw her be the only one in that minority to figure out that Tony was full of crap there originally. And then we also, we've seen her kind of go from a terrible place on her original DeKal tribe to being in the final eight. So I think she's clearly playing against much better competitors in this season than she did on One World. And that's like the understatement of the century. But I do still consider her win in One World the best single game played in the history of Survivor. And yeah, again, not great competition, but it still takes a lot to completely like mind screw that many people for 39 days.
Okay.
It's true. Those guys were volunteering to go to tribal council on their own. poor Bill Posley. But that's another matter for another time, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. All right. Let's get into talking a little bit about what's going on with the survivors on social media.
Tweets, baby, tweets. They just fill me with joy.
Baby boy, I'm playing the rap extortion advantage. Unless you give me 6 fire tokens, you don't get to finish this rap. Baby boy.
Bryce, I don't have 6 fire tokens.
Too bad. All I have to say is tweets, baby tweets, baby tweets.
Wow, poor Jacob. Wow. Poor Jacob. Singer Weinstein got extorted by Bryce.
That was incredible.
But I think we all benefited. No offense to Jacob. I think that was great.
Wow.
That was fun to hear.
Boy.
I like extortion, apparently. I'm
oh,
all for
my
it.
God. It's so fun. Love it. I love it so much. It's a good time.
Do you think that the extortion advantage is a good advantage, or do you think it just worked out perfectly because of who got it and what Tony had to do in order to make it work?
I don't know if you're asking me or Rob, but I'm terrified because I watched Jeff's like 9-minute video, like Jeff Probst breaks down the episode on YouTube. And Heath just said, oh, it's now one of my favorite things we've ever done. And of course, this means they're going to do it again. And what's going to happen is, imagine if Tony doesn't get those 6 tokens. Like, imagine if they're not out there or nobody gives them to him. He sits out. He doesn't get to go to tribal council. We don't get to see what happens. This could have gone way wrong. It worked out really well that it was Tony and that there were tokens in the game and that he was smart enough to use the need for tokens to get tokens from Jeremy specifically and play it out that way. But it could go so wrong, and I'm sure we'll probably see that at some point.
Okay. I agree. It went so right because it was Tony. I didn't even think about like that we could have been robbed of this brilliant move because of Tony not having a vote at this tribal council. So, yeah, it worked out here, but it is something that like I think, yeah, it's scary.
And a lot has to go right. What if they asked for 8? I mean, they could have asked for 8 and the thing would have been blown. It doesn't just require the player on the back end of it doing the right thing, being well positioned. He had 3 to begin with. What if he didn't have 3? There's so much that could have gone wrong. Mm-hmm. The fact that it went right is a blessing, but it could have easily been a curse for sure. And you know who loves curses are vampires.
Yeah. Okay. The curse of evil Donathan Vampire. We'll see if that comes up. Does he come out of a coffin? I feel like there's. I think it would be a good movie.
He's in Eastern Kentucky. He probably comes out of like an abandoned coal mine of some sort.
Yeah, that'd be a good place to hang out during the day.
Yeah, no doubt. Probably not a lot of light getting in there. Nobody wants to go in there. Like it'd be a good vampire lair for sure.
Okay. All right. Let's keep working on that because it's going to be a long off season. We could get everything in place to be able to do the full screenplay of this.
Yeah, the people that run those things are bloodsuckers anyway. So. Hey, making a horror movie, Rob, is that something you've ever thought about?
Not recently. No.
Okay,
no.
Just checking.
I don't think so.
Get out. You got it, girl.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about some check in with some of the survivors on social media. Tony Vlachos, we've documented his return to social media. He's taken a break from fighting with Jeremy. He talked about after the episode. First, he had a tweet that was like from Gladiator right after the episode, and that he tweeted out, "I have one question for my Team TV supporters," with this clip.
Is this not why you are here?
There you go. So there's Tony, the Gladiator.
Jordan, should we start calling Tony Spaniard?
Yes, we should. And I also think I believe I responded to that tweet with Strength and Honor. Which is from that movie as well. And maybe after we're done with the Evil Donathan Vampire movie, it's now the remake of Gladiator with Tony Vlachos, who I'd much rather work with than the actual star of Gladiator.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, the frost. Sometimes it makes the blade stick.
Winters, why are you armed?
Also, Tony then tweeted out a couple days after that, he tweeted out,
Survivor players are just that. We do not have a role where we're reading off a flawless player script. We're average people in the jungle being extremely vulnerable, playing a game. Stop the personal criticism. We play our game and the edit tells their story. Hashtag llama minute. I don't know what he's referring to. He's just saying,
I don't either.
Stop attacking other players. I don't know what this is in regards to.
Yeah, maybe people were mad at Jeremy or mad at somebody else for jumping on board with Tony. They were mad at that, or maybe they were mad at Nick for flipping, or maybe they were mad at Kim or Denise or Sarah Lucina. Who knows? I have not been keeping track of the llama minute.
Yes.
I know Tony has not been on Twitter all season. Is this the first llama minute?
I'm not sure. I think that maybe it's just like, hey, I made a good move, but it doesn't mean that everybody else is a dummy that didn't know about this move. So I'm not sure exactly what it is. But a couple of the other survivors, Christian Hubicki said, thank you, Tony. Lirsa said this, that Rodney Lavoie Jr. said, side note, you are hilarious, my guy. And regular Donathan said, you hit the nail on the head, buddy. Thank you. The regular Donathan getting in on the action.
He was invoked, so he had to appear. That's the way it goes. It's like Candyman. We said his name.
Check his neck for bite marks, because I don't know if that is a regular. Is this regular? Nice.
Yeah, you got to check the butt, Rob. Come on, we got to check the butt for bite marks. We already went over this. The ABVs.
Okay. All right. Are you good? Good, normal, Donathan. Okay.
Yeah, Rob, how much of a fine would a butt bite be on Too Hot to Handle?
I would think it's probably more than a kiss. So I would think
less than 6,000, though. I would think.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, I would imagine
4,500. I'd say 4,500.
Yeah, let's stop this auction. right. Yeah. Also, Kim Spradlin tweeted about the episode. She said, "Wow." The men really know their way around a pole. Yeah. So it was a pole challenge this week that we got to see on Survivor. A throwback.
Everybody lift your poles.
Yeah. There we go. Jordan, have we done this challenge before? Jeff was talking about the records for this challenge that I don't recall this challenge.
I don't remember what season it's from, but I definitely recognize that. They've done it, or at least something along those lines, where you're balancing something with a long pole.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kim also said another crotch idol down the drain.
I don't have my crotch now.
Okay. Is that a unlucky place for the idol, Antonio?
What's a lucky place for it if that's not the lucky place? I don't know. How many crotch idols have there been truly? I would imagine most idols at some point have spent some time in the crotch. So I don't think it's lucky or unlucky.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I forgot to play this clip before, but this was also at the Tribal Council. We have not seen a ton of analogies at Tribal Council. Jeff goes for one of his own. Antonio, tell me if you thought that this one landed.
So it's like you're on one of those lazy Susans and you're just constantly spinning. This game gets you no matter where you are.
What do you think about the Survivor is like being on a lazy Susan metaphor?
I mean, based on your podcast this season about Curb Your Enthusiasm, I thought lazy Susan was a term we weren't allowed to say anymore.
Yeah.
There were some negative implications. I don't know. In a lazy Susan, I mean, first of all, I don't think people ever get on them. They're for like spices and like pantry products. And then a person comes along and spins it and gets one out that they need to use. I'm lost. I'm lost in the metaphor at this point already. And I hadn't even, I don't know. Lazy Susan. That's good. Good job, Jeff. Yeah.
By the way, you never get what you need. Once something goes on a lazy Susan, you never get it. Like if you want like the crunchy noodles at a Chinese restaurant, it's on the other side of the lazy Susan. You start turning it, then someone else starts turning it. I think the passing method, picking it up and passing it, is a much better method than this lazy Susan. You never get what you want.
When society comes back, Jordan, we may be all lazy Susans all the time. Nobody's picking stuff up and passing it around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what you do. You have like two things of duck sauce, one for each side of the table, two things of mustard. And then you put the two that you have, like, again, I'll use the crunchy noodles. You have one on each side of the table, and then you don't even need to pass.
Antonio,
everyone has their own.
I have been podcasting with Jordan for, I think, 8 years. I've never heard him this fired up on any subject until we got to Lazy Susan talk.
I know. This is something, Jordan, I mean, we need some, have you been using the online service BetterHelp? to get your lazy Susan thoughts out here into the world. This is not promoted content, by the way. Jordan's lazy Susan thoughts. I understand your problems, and I agree with them. I just don't know that we've got a better solution at this point. You're saying put enough for each side of the table, and that's it. What if it's a circle, though? How do you do that? Four corners?
Four corners of the circle, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I know circles don't technically have corners, but they have. You could put it into segments, and you could do that. But I know once something goes on the lazy Susan, it's like a black hole. You never see it again.
Okay, all right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tell Jeff Probst he needs to stock up on the cold sesame.
And I feel like every time I'm at a table with the lazy Susan, the good stuff is always on the other side of the lazy Susan. I'm never on the good side.
Are we still talking about lazy Susan?
Yes.
Lazy Susan is another villain in the evil Vampire Donathan movie.
Yes. Is this your ex, Susan? Well, why are you so worked up about this?
I've always been anti-lazy Susan.
Yeah. Okay. Hannah Shapiro
says, lazy Susans are getting away with murder.
Hannah Shapiro says that I want Tony sitting in the corner during a Project Runway season, grumpily going, forget make it work, damage it. Was that one of his lines from the fashion show?
He was out on the fashion show. He wanted no part of it. He said my pants would sell more than your outfits, and if you look at those pants, I don't think so. don't think so. Those legs are coming apart big time.
Yeah, I don't think so. Antonio, do you have any thoughts on the fashion show?
I think what is missing from every fashion runway is at the end of the runway, there should be a giant Lazy Susan. Stick with me here.
Oh, boy.
And then the model can just walk out onto the Lazy Susan. It spins around. Everybody on all sides can see the look, and then they can walk back.
But isn't the turn a big thing?
The turn is a big thing, but a lazy Susan is a constant turn. So there you go.
Yeah. Okay. I think people want to see the turn. I think people want to see the turn as opposed to then freezing on the lazy Susan. I know Jordan doesn't want to see that.
I'm pro turn, anti lazy Susan.
Okay.
It's fair. It's fair.
All right. let's see. Rob has a pollster was back in action this week.
Everybody lift your polls.
Okay. We asked, who was this episode's MVP? All right. What percentage of the audience said Tony, Antonio?
100%.
100%.
That's what I think.
Yeah, Jordan.
I have to go with the under.
Yeah. It was close. 96%.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
4% trolls. I want to know who the 4% said then. At what point is 4%? Who are these? Who's the MVP for the other 4%?
Like okay.
Parvati and Natalie for getting Tony the advantage that led to all this?
Well, we asked then whether you had Tony or someone else in the previous question, who was the episode's non-Tony MVP?
Oh, okay. Hmm. Okay. I got to imagine it's either Parvati or Natalie because, or it could be Jeremy, I suppose, but I feel like they did the second best move there. Michelle did some good stuff too. I don't know. I'm going with Parvati.
Okay. Jordan, who is your guess?
Even though she was on the wrong side of the vote, I still think that Kim had a... I think Kim looked good in this episode, even though she was on the wrong side of the numbers.
Talking about the fashion show?
Not talking about the fashion show. I'm talking about her reads on Tony.
No, it was Jeremy. Okay.
I mean, the fact that he didn't get voted out here was very good for him, but he almost didn't want to go along with it.
Yeah. Okay. We also asked in week two that we asked this question, we brought it back, which Cops R Us outcome is most likely? Antonio, we haven't talked about this too much. How do you think Sarah is going to handle this first before we get into the results of this question?
Not good. Yeah, not good. Not good at all. I don't see this going well.
Do they vote together again?
So I was thinking about this next week. What one of the things that Tony's move did, and it was great, Jeremy maybe gets some MVP points for trusting Tony and sticking his neck out and doing what Tony told him, even though it was 11th hour, and getting Michelle on board with the vote. Now Jeremy knows that Tony was the one that was telling him the truth and that all those other people were lying to him. And even if Kim and
Denise
come up to
Jeremy...
But he
was lying in the first place. That's what's so great about this.
Right, yeah. I was going to say, even if they come up to Jeremy and say, no, he was planning to turn on you. You don't understand. Jeremy's like, proof's in the pudding. Like, I saw how the vote went. You can say whatever you want to say. I know how you voted. I know who told me to do differently, and I know who told me why. So no matter what you thought was going on, the reality is different. And now Tony could turn around and vote Jeremy out next episode, which I think would be the classic Tony move, right? But I just don't know if Sarah wants to stay in the game. I think behooves her to work with Tony rather than against him, even though it's 4-4. I think she's better off to swallow her pride here and to vote with Tony at least one more vote. And to probably vote Kim or Denise out here.
Yeah, what a great start to the third act of this season of the Tony and Sarah relationship. What is going to happen? Will Sarah end up getting back together with Tony because it behooves her, or will this be this blood feud that ultimately ends up taking one or the both of them out, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think actually Ben could be a big piece of the puzzle here because I kind of see this final eight as four groups of two. I think you have the Tony and Nick, you have Sarah and Ben, Jeremy and Michelle, and then Kim and Denise. And I think kind of, I could see Ben maybe turning on Sarah and going and, working with Tony. We did see him give Tony a fire token in this episode. So I think if he decides to turn his back on Sarah, she could be in big trouble, especially if she's seen as a group with Kim and Denise, which after this vote, she very well could. But I could also see, Ben sort of being the glue now that tries to get Tony and Sarah back together, get with Nick, get with Jeremy and Michelle, and get rid of either Kim or Denise. So I would be pretty surprised. Even though I think Jeremy is still going to be a big target, and I know Tony will want to get rid of him at some point, I think it's going to be Sarah, Kim, or Denise going home next. My guess would be Kim, because Denise has the better relationship with Jeremy and Michelle.
Yep. I think so, too. And the thing is, on one hand, Ben can easily get upset when he's burned, and rightfully so. But at this tribal council, after the vote goes down, and people are in shock, and Tony's laughing, and Ben, I think, really approves. Ben is smiling. Ben says, boom. Like, Ben is really, he's into it. Now, he's got to know, or he's going to find out that he got played by Tony, and maybe he won't feel great about that. But honestly, it could have gone way different for Ben. Like, his name was out there, and he could have been targeted. They didn't have to target Sophie. They could have voted any of those people out. The fact that Tony didn't go for Ben, I think Tony can use that if Ben comes at him and says, I didn't want to vote you out. Like, no, it was all about Sophie. It had nothing to do with you. I didn't want the move to blow up. I wanted to get Sophie out. I still want to work with you. That's why I didn't vote you out. And that might work. So I'm excited to see how that plays out for sure.
Okay. Just to go back to these poll results. So we asked back in week two, what's going to happen this season? Is Sarah going to betray Tony? Is Tony going to betray Sarah? Neither Tony or Sarah were going to turn on each other. Back in week two, the number one response was that 44% felt like that Sarah was going to betray Tony at some point. All right. Antonio, do you think that number has gone up or down?
Up.
No, that's exactly the same. 44% still believe that Sarah will betray Tony. But the big number that has jumped, hold on. The big number that has jumped is that 49% of people now believe that Tony will betray Sarah at some point. What was this week?
That's what I was going to say. I think, Tony, even though he didn't vote Sarah out, this was still a betrayal of their alliance. And honestly, I think if Sarah were to make a move against Tony, or at least attempt to make a move against Tony, it's not a betrayal anymore. Tony did it first.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll see. All right. Let's get ready to get into our This Week in Survivor History quiz. All right, here we go.
Twish.
All right. Antonio, are you aware of just how dominant I have been? Not Donathan. How dominant that my run has been. This has been, historically, I believe, my strongest season.
Yeah, you're unstoppable, Rob, and I don't plan on stopping you. I want to put up a good performance, let the chips fall where they may, but I remain constantly impressed by your ability, and that's impressed, not depressed, by your ability to pull these Survivor ephemera who went out when and who voted against whom. It's really impressive, honestly. You are at the top of your game, and okay. I'm not sucking kneecaps with that. It blows my mind, honestly, truly.
All right. Well, thank you, Antonio. Let's see. But you're just trying to get me to get my guard down so that you could bite me in the butt.
Yes. Turns out I'm from Kentucky too, baby.
Yeah, that's why he was buttering you up first.
Yes, I like a bite with butter better than a non-buttered bite.
All right. So we have four multiple choice questions. Each of you will answer two of them. To go for 2 points, you won't hear the multiple choice option. If you're wrong on a 2-point question, your opponent will be able to steal 1 point. If you want to hear your multiple choice options, you will get 1 point for a correct answer, but your opponent cannot steal. And then we'll go to a final round where both of you will be able to receive points. So the categories for today's questions, we have unlucky, touchy subjects, last place, and idle finders. So Antonio, which category would you like to go to first?
Idle finders. Let's do idle finders.
Okay, we're going to go to Survivor Micronesia. The episode is called I'm Ruthless and Have a Smile on My Face from April 24th, 2008, 12 years ago Friday. After Ozzy was blindsided with the idol, a new one was hidden. Who found this idol? This is directly after Ozzy was blindsided.
Okay. I know the people that were in the game, but I can't remember which of them found the idol. So I'd like multiple choice.
Okay, was it A, Amanda Kimmel, B, James Clement, C, Jason Siska, D, Parvati Shallow?
I'm going to go with James.
James is incorrect. He actually found his idols in Survivor China. It was Jason Siska, who, just like Ozzy, gets blindsided with the idol in this episode.
Prince Siska.
So unfortunately,
oh, dang.
Yes, Prince Siska got blindsided with an idol. And Antonio, unfortunately, you have 0 points. Rob, you get the next question. We have unlucky, touchy subjects, and last place.
I'll go to last place.
Okay, we're going to Survivor Palau from April 21st, 2005, 15 years ago Tuesday. Who was the first person to be eliminated from the immunity challenge in which players had to stay under a metal grate while the tide progressively submerged the grate?
Who was the first person out of the challenge?
Yes.
All right. I believe it was Janu.
Janu is correct, and the reason that this is very memorable is that she is the first person to go to Exile Island in Survivor history. The reason I didn't give you the episode title is that the episode was called Exile Island, and that would be too much of a giveaway. But yeah, Janu, first person out of that challenge. She quits in this episode, but not before she did like some weird dancing on Exile Island. So Rob, you get 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio, you have unlucky and touchy subjects.
Touchy subjects, please.
Okay, so we're going to Survivor All-Stars. The episode's called Stupid People, Stupid, Stupid People, from April 22nd, 2004, 16 years ago Wednesday. In the Survivor All-Stars Touchy Subject Challenge, who was the most common answer for the question, who would you trust with your life?
I know this one. Unfortunately, for some current company, the answer was BR, Boston Rob.
The answer is BR, Boston Rob. So, Antonio, you get 2 points there.
You better trust me with your life, everybody.
I mean, for Amber, yeah. I mean that was, I mean, that the correct answer.
Yeah. I think if they gave that same survey maybe a couple days later, the answer would not have been Boston Rob, but at the time it was. So, 2-2 game,
listen,
Rob.
To be fair, not a lot of great options to trust with your life in that group.
Yeah, one of the people in that group had dug a hole in a beach that was going to be flooded with water. So,
hey,
yeah.
Look, in the same quiz, Rupert was voted the most trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Or the most honest. I think it was most trustworthy or most honest or something. So.
Yeah.
And he didn't get cuts either. He just, everybody liked Rupert, but you see what happened.
Okay.
Yeah. So 2-2, and it is Rob's question. We're going to unlucky. Survivor Australian Outback. Enough is enough. Sorry. I don't know why I'm talking about myself today. Survivor Australia, the Australian Outback.
Too worked
enough
up
is
with
enough.
The lazy Susan.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Enough is enough from April 19th, 2001, 19 years ago, Sunday. And yes, this is a question that's called Unlucky, and it's Australian Survivor, but it has nothing to do with Lucky from Australian Survivor. During the final five immunity challenge, in which players had to answer questions based on a story that Jeff read before the challenge and subsequently opened locks when they got a right answer, who lost the challenge due to dropping one of their locks on the course?
I believe it was Keith.
Keith is correct. You get 2 points there. You have a 4-2 lead. Yeah, Keith actually finished first. He answered all of his questions, but when he got to Jeff at the end, he only had 4 out of the 5 locks. Colby was right behind him and had all of his locks. So Rob, And then, of course, Kentucky Joe gets voted out in this episode. So, Rob, you have a 4-2 lead going into the final round. And as we've been doing this season, this is going to be trivia about the player who was voted out on Winners at War. So this is going to be Sophie trivia. These are going to be multiple choice questions. The only difference between this and the regular game is that once you get a question wrong, you can't answer any more questions in this round. So, Antonio, you're going to need to get this question correct if you want to keep going in the game. The other thing is it's only three options and you will always get your multiple choice. They're all worth 1 point. So I need a number between 1 and 4, Antonio.
How about number 3?
Okay, so number 3. Which of these players did not vote for Sophie at the first iteration of the South Pacific Final Five? Was it A, Albert, B, Brandon, C, Rancher Rick? So there were two Final Fives in South Pacific. This is the first iteration.
Can you give me the options again one more time?
Yes, this is who did not vote for Sophie. Albert, Brandon, Rancher Rick.
I'm going to say Rick.
Rick is correct. Antonio, you get a point there. That was the tribal council. Yeah, Brandon goes home. Brandon gave the idol to Albert. And Albert knows that Brandon's going out, but I think sort of throws a courtesy vote in the other direction. But he knew where the votes were going. But you have you have 3 points, Rob. You have 4. The next question, in which of these votes did Sophie not vote in the majority? Was it A, the Edna boot, B, the Michaela boot, C, the Stacey boot?
I think it was it wasn't a vote split. I think that they were trying to let Michaela, if Michaela came back from Redemption Island, they were going to tell her like, oh no, we were working with you the whole time. So I believe it was Michaela.
Michaela is correct. So Rob, you have a 5-3 lead. Antonio, Sophie is one of 3 Survivor winners to receive a vote at the first tribal council they attended. Who is not a member of this club? A, Aris, B, Jenna, C, Chris Darty. And by the way, it was Stacey Powell who voted for Sophie in her first tribal council.
So Aris, Jenna, or
Chris Darty, who is not a member of this club.
Trying to remember Amazon. I'm going to say it is Jenna.
Unfortunately, Christy voted for Jenna. That was a really crazy, I believe it was like a 5-1 vote. Aris was not voted for at his first tribal council. It was right after the tribe swap. Melinda got voted out 5-2. Shane Powers was voted for twice at that tribal council. Aris did not receive a vote. And then Chris Darty got 3 votes at his first tribal council. And if the Fat Five were unable to come together, he could have very well been the first person voted out of that season. So, Rob, you win the quiz 5-3.
Sorry, Antonio.
Holy hell, we smoked the other 2 teams.
I'm sending my vampire squad in your direction. We'll get there in about 3 years.
All right. Well, Antonio, I'm such a juggernaut this season.
It's unbelievable. You truly are unstoppable. Really impressive stuff, Rob.
Yeah. All right. Well, the ball's been bouncing my way that I'm due for some regression to the mean here over these last couple of weeks, I think.
Well, could have happened this week. That's all I'm saying.
You know what I think it is?
Would have been fine.
It's also that we're in the spring, and so there's not a million Guatemala questions.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
I think that's part of it.
That's too bad.
Yes.
I like Jordan, believe that Guatemala is an underrated season, and I think everyone should watch it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. All right. Jordan, it was also on This Week in Survivor History that I believe the LJ Cagayan vote happened.
I believe it was. I didn't go to Cagayan this week.
And I only know this because it's been circulating that I did a podcast with Sophie that week to talk about that vote.
Yeah, that very interesting, where she predicts that Tony would turn on her if they ever played together, and she was correct.
It's not too far away from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was always a fan of that LJ boat.
Okay. All right.
It's crazy to hear that clip. I know the archives that's been pulled from the archives, and that minute and a half clip is going around.
Yeah.
It is surreal to really think about the stuff that was probably talked about. I know someday someone's going to go back through the evolution of strategy and really pull all those insane things that were said there. It's not going to be me.
No.
But there's probably a wealth of information out there That was a really great pull. I was like, wow, yeah. Can't believe that. That's right on.
Yeah, it's wild.
Tony needs a Trish right now to get it to be like, okay, you know what? You blindsided my alley, but that's fine. We're all getting back together. So maybe Ben will be the Twitch. The Twitch.
The Twitch. Yeah, maybe.
And he's been on Twitch. He's in the Twitch Alliance, which didn't work out too well.
Yes. Okay.
By the way, Antonio, who's the first survivor you followed on Twitter? The first
Survivor winner.
So
I think it's either Richard Hatch or Mike Holloway.
So Richard Hatch, known for being the first Survivor winner of all time, is also known for being the first Survivor winner you followed on Twitter.
Wow.
Hell yeah. I don't follow too many Survivors on Twitter. And it's not an affront to any individual Survivor. I follow a few, and I remember specifically the ones that I follow generally. So that is not a huge surprise to me, obviously.
Okay. All right, Antonio, anything else Survivor-related you want to discuss here?
I have enjoyed this season immensely, and there's a lot that could go wrong or can go wrong.
Or go wrong.
In these seasons, there's a lot that could go wrong. We don't need no more heat, baby. But I really have enjoyed this. I don't know. I'm curious, just generally speaking, from the two of you, if you think there's any world, no matter who it is there any world where the jury would vote for a person coming back from Edge of Extinction, whoever the second returnee is, to win the game? Or is no one going to want that to be representative of this season, do you think?
I'd be surprised. I think the only way for it to really happen is if, like, someone gets voted out at the final six or seven, when I don't know when it's going to happen, but, like, someone gets voted out right before the Edge of Extinction challenge, comes back, only misses a day. I could see it possibly happening, especially if this person, like, gets idled out or goes out on weird circumstances and is able to say, look, I missed one day of this game. Yes, I got voted out, but it was kind of a weird vote. If they're able to explain it well, I can see it. I don't think any of the people that we've seen on the Edge for a long time are going to have a chance. Not that, you know, they're not doing a good job finding fire tokens, and you know, you have to win the challenge, which is pretty impressive against tough competition. I just can't see a jury of winners, even though they've been living with the winner. Even though they've been living with the other people on the Edge for a long time, voting for someone who got voted out and, like, missed the majority of the game.
Well, it's interesting because there's two schools of thought where it's like, okay, well, let's say hypothetically somebody goes out at the final six or seven and they come right back in. And then it's almost like, well, I wasn't even at the Edge of Extinction for that long, so vote for me. Or is it more likely to be the person who's like the Underwood, who's been there for a long time, say like a Parvati, where she's been there for, you know, the more than half of the game and then comes back in and mm-hmm. then goes on to win the game. So I definitely think it's a possibility. I think there's a non-zero chance that we could see an Edge of Extinction person. Like, I'm not one of those people that feels like automatically it's going to be disqualifying for somebody who's been to the Edge of Extinction.
I just, and this is probably my negative thought brain, but I've tried to think of, like, what could possibly derail this season, considering the people that are left in the game. I feel like I could support any of them winning. My thought is, okay, it would be that outcome. It would be the Underwood outcome. But even the Underwood outcome would mean probably Ethan or someone like that, mm-hmm. that had a lot of sympathy from the people that were over there, that was very well liked and came back into the game. And I don't know that I would hate that. So I just don't want to jinx it, but I don't feel like there's going to be too much to sabotage this season for me. I think no matter what happens, I think I'm going to be satisfied with the outcome.
Is it possible that maybe we got the clue this week of that we could see some person in the game go to the Edge of Extinction, come back, some sort of like undead return to return back into the game in an undead state to go on some murderous run to the end of the game? It was that foreshadowing this week. A vampire, if you will. Yes.
It would have to be Nick.
Yes. Is that state that you're talking about Kentucky, Rob? Because then I would say possibly.
Maybe.
I got a deal for you. Who knows? Maybe that's what it was. And maybe that was a huge breadcrumb in the edit that we're all going to look back on in weeks and say, how did we not understand the vampire reference? There was no reason for that scene to be in the episode. Nick is going to come back undead and slay everyone.
Maybe.
If they let him get to the end like Chris, it'll bite them in the butt.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Of course, you can follow Antonio. Or actually, can people follow you? Are you private on the Twitter?
I'm public. I'm at a public stage in my life right now. I'm at AC Mazzaro on Twitter.
Okay.
Two Z's, one R.
All right. Check out Antonio. Of course, the Better Call Saul coverage. If you've missed any of it, it's a great binge. Really enjoy. Anytime you and Josh get together to cover a show, looking forward to jumping in with you guys this week to talk about some Better Call Saul feedback. Hopefully I will have watched the finale tonight by the time people are listening to this. Don't tweet me any questions yet.
Yeah, please. Let's keep Rob unspoiled about the vampires that are in the season.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my God. Anyway, and then Jordan, what do you have going on?
Just watched the NFL draft. I'm excited about my guy Mekhi. So I really do think the Jets had a good draft. I have never watched the full, like,
does Mekhi Becton know he's your guy?
I don't think he knows who me or anything that I do on Twitter. I don't think he's aware of that. However, he's my guy now. He's protecting my other guy, Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy with the Jets draft. I've watched the first, entire three rounds. And I watched some of the fourth round today, which I almost never do. But like, what else is going on? So I'm just looking forward to Survivor, still teaching online, and it's all good.
Okay. It's all good, man. All right. thank you guys so much for listening. Of course, we have a ton of great stuff still to come. Be on the lookout for Renap this weekend. We're going to play The Family Feud, The Wiggle Room still to come. Got some bonus coverage in the works as well. And then we will do it all again next week. Of course, thank you again so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.